Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on cancer and chronic disease by talking about how to stay healthy during these uncertain and very stressful times. Over the past few months, we've been talking about why we are going in the wrong health direction in this country. 60% of people in the U.S. have at least one chronic disease. About 40% have two or more, according to the CDC. Poor diet is the leading cause of these diseases. These numbers are projected to get worse, despite the fact that the road to prevention is clear. Lifestyle medicine can prevent up to 80% of chronic diseases. In order for people to be active in their communities, they need to be healthy. This is something that we've been talking about on so many of our shows. Once disease happens, so many people are affected, obviously the patient, their loved ones, and also their caregivers. Today's guests, two doctors, are determined to turn this around by focusing on prevention and science-backed methods to live a healthy life. Dr. David Katz is a specialist in internal medicine, preventive medicine, public health, and lifestyle medicine. He is globally recognized for his expertise in chronic disease prevention. He's the founding director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center and past president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Katz is the founder of two nonprofits, True Health Initiative, is a global coalition of experts from over 50 countries united to combat misinformation and disinformation that impact public, personal, and planetary health. And Diet ID measures and manages your population's diet and then takes steps toward better eating. Dr. Katz has roughly 250 peer-reviewed publications and is the author of 19 books. He co-authored the book, How to Eat, with Mark Bittman. Hi, Dr. Katz. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose. Great to be with you.
Great to have you. Dr. Columbus Batiste is a double board certified cardiologist, interventional cardiologist, and lifestyle medicine advocate. Dr. Batiste is regional chief of cardiology at the Southern California Kaiser Permanente Medical Group and is the author of the new book, Selfish, A Cardiologist's Guide to Healing a Broken Heart. Selfish provides a blueprint for coping with everyday stressors of life that lead to heart disease, anxiety, and depression. Dr. Columbus Batiste is co-founder of Healthy Heart Nation, an organization that works to foster a healthier future for people of African descent by addressing disparities in health, education, and justice. Dr. Batiste has been featured in documentaries including Eating You Alive and The Game Changers. And he, like Dr. Katz, frequently shares his wealth of knowledge in maintaining a healthy heart and adopting a plant-based diet in the media and at conferences. Hi, Dr. Batiste. Thank you so much for joining us and thank you for your important work.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we started doing this series, as I told both of you, after I sadly lost my dad to a rare and aggressive form of small cell prostate cancer in early January. And he, like so many people, really struggled with his weight for decades. And the response we've been receiving from this series has been really incredible. People have been sharing so many of their personal stories. And Dr. Batiste, I want to start off with you because in your new book, you also share your personal story about your father passing away from the ill effects of diabetes on August 12th, 2010. You watched your father pass away, and this was 8 months after your wife's father passed away from kidney failure as a result of high blood pressure. So you come at this work from a very personal experience.
Yes, no, it is personal. And first, let me start by my condolences for you and your loss. I'll tell you, it doesn't matter how old you are or where you're at in life, when you lose someone close to you, especially a parent, it's something that reverberates throughout your years remaining on this earth. Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter from my perspective of what do we do with our grief? How do we move on from that and use that as a platform to make change? And so that's what I've chosen to do as a result of my father's experience. And I'll tell you, my father's experience was so interesting in the fact that he was by all accounts moderate. If you were to see him on the street, you'd think that he was the average Joe. He didn't appear overweight. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink. But I'll tell you, the ill effects of the standard American diet still reverberate throughout our DNA, throughout our in the disease process that's there. And so that's really what rippled inside of him. And it really forced me to have a moment where I had to pause and stop and look at the direction of care that I was delivering to my patients and really begin to go back and dig into the science of areas in which I wasn't taught to really uncover the fact that it's centered in nutrition. And our intention has to be that in terms of strengthening ourselves so we're able to fuel our body to fight disease. And so I'll pause there, but that's essentially was my journey and really the beginning point, or I'd say my origin story, so to speak, down this journey of lifestyle.
Well, thank you for your wishes. And I, the same to you, condolences to the loss of your father, because as you say, no matter how old you are, it really is painful. And, you know, I will always wonder for the rest of my days, you know, if my father was able to get his weight under control and some of his food addictions under control, would he still be with us? And we'll never know, you know, so sadly. So in his honor, I'm doing this show because we're just losing too many people. Dr. Katz, you've been also doing this work for a very long time. And I'm so happy for you that your father is still alive. I've heard you in many interviews say that you still hike together. And you know that you're so lucky. I would give anything to be able to walk with my dad still. But as you know, Dr. Katz, we're just going in the wrong direction when it comes to cancer and chronic disease.
We are indeed, Rose, and lots to talk about. So first of all, my condolences to you, Rose, and you, Columbus. And I agree, obviously, losing a parent is a devastating life event, even if it happens in the fullness of time, and especially when it doesn't. And I am very privileged. My dad has Bluezonian written all over him. He's turning 86. We routinely hike together. He's slowed down a little bit, but I'm sort of in the opposite camp where my dad's a cardiologist. My family was focused on health and nutrition, kind of ahead of the curve. I acquired an interest as a young person and became an agent of change in the family. And so for decades now, my father's had a very optimal lifestyle, exercises routinely, has been very lean, and has a fairly optimal diet, and is reaping the benefits of all of that, as am I, because our thriving relationship continues and doing things we love to do together. But recently, after some storms here in New England, they had some downed trees on their property. My 86-year-old father and I were out there with chainsaws cleaning things up and, you know, lugging heavy logs. And I thought, but really, he's just amazing. So very, very privileged. And yes, Rose, we're going in the wrong direction, or we're going around in circles. First of all, we've known for decades that the formula to eliminate 80% or more premature death and chronic disease in this country is quite simple. Better use of feet, forks, and fingers. So more physical activity, optimizing diet quality, and fingers should not be used to bring tobacco products and other toxins to our lips. 80% of chronic disease and premature death vary with how we use our feet, forks, and fingers. So the inability to get there from here is not for want of knowing where there is. But we have engaged in one silly boondoggle after another with regard to diet. You know, we just cut fat and threw out the baby with the bathwater. So we cut out healthy oils, then we added them back and just cut carbs. At no point did we focus systematically on eating wholesome foods in a sensible assembly, elevating overall diet quality. I keep hoping we run out of silly alternatives to that and maybe we're finally there. But until we get there, it's unlikely we'll see significant progress. And just a quick comment about our recent shared history, namely the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic. We all were eagerly awaiting advances in specific protection, namely effective vaccines. But we failed to use what might be considered a universal vaccine, namely health promotion. I kept waiting to hear from the federal government the launch of an initiative to get healthy together. I mean, we're all hunkering down. We're all worried about the effects of this acute threat. This is a perfect opportunity for us to focus on improving diet quality, figuring out ways to put more physical activity into our days, whether on our own in our homes or socially distanced together, one way or another. We missed that opportunity. And Rose, you've mentioned some statistics. 60% of adults in this country have at least one major chronic disease. 40% or more have two major chronic diseases. Here's another important statistic. There was a sophisticated computer modeling exercise in the Journal of the American Heart Association looking at cardiometabolic health in this country and the toll of COVID. And the conclusion was that 60% or more of the toll of COVID, 60% of the hospitalization, 60% of the deaths would have been avoided, even if we had no specific protection against SARS-CoV-2, but if we had simply come into that pandemic as a healthier nation with a lesser version of the prior pandemic of cardiometabolic disease.
This is such an incredible statistic because pretty much all of us know someone who passed, whether it's a close loved one or a friend. And yet this is hardly talked about. The 60% of these deaths could have been prevented.
I honestly don't know why. I don't know why it wasn't addressed. I was ranting about it to anybody who would listen from very early on in the pandemic. If you remember where our experience started, you know, we first got the news out of Wuhan. Then we got the news out of Seoul, Korea, where we were already starting to hear that older, sicker people were very vulnerable to this virus, healthier people much less so. And then the next big wave of information came from Lombardy, Italy, where there was a very high mortality toll, but once again, highly concentrated among people who had a major chronic, usually cardiometabolic disease and or advanced age. Well, advanced age is not something we can do much about, but cardiometabolic disease, we certainly could. So we actually had lead time to do something about this, but the let's all get healthy together to immunize ourselves against this while we're waiting for specific vaccines, and there's no reason not to use both. I kept expecting that to happen. It never did. I honestly don't know why, except that we sort of got caught up in tunnel vision, thinking only about the virus rather than thinking about a healthier host, namely a healthier person, is going to fare far better if exposed to this virus. And it became clear we were all going to be exposed at one point or another because it was everywhere and it was hard to avoid. But our outcomes were in our own hands, and we really missed that opportunity.
Well, I want to give out the phone number. If you have any questions for our guest today, Dr. David Katz and Dr. Columbus Batiste, two incredible lifestyle medicine doctors, we're talking about how to stay healthy during these unprecedented and very stressful times. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Dr. Batiste, if you have anything to add about what Dr. Katz just laid out there, and then we can talk about stress, because in your book, Selfish, you write about stress. And as you know, there's just so much stress right now. We were just listening to a piece this morning on NPR about how college students are being picked up on the streets. You know, some people feel like they have to leave this country because they're not safe. So there's just so much stress out there, which has a direct connection to our overall health.
Absolutely. And just to circle back for a bit, I think that our shared experience in the SARS-CoV pandemic, it was centered in stress and fear. And one of the things that I oftentimes will tell my kids as they're growing up is that, you know, you tend to respond once you make the decision early on. And the habits that are built early on, they have reverberations throughout your life. And so we can understand the fact that as our youth, our kids inside of school are taught about eating practices by having the standard American diet. Then they grow up and we have these holiday celebrations that are all centered around foods that it's our culture, but also where we're not really focusing on health promoting as a nation. it's no wonder the fact that during a period of stress of something like the SARS-CoV pandemic, that we didn't turn and transform our dietary practices the way that they should be to strengthen our health and well-being. And so that was clearly shown, it was evident when you looked at the grocery stores and the areas of the market that were still left intact, which were the fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And the areas that were demolished and that people were wanting were the foods that potentially were causing harm or at least fueling the inflammation. And we know there's a direct correlation between the relationship between our consumption of food as well as in our immunologic response. Not only that, just in terms of where we're preparing and bracing is what will be the impact of this virus in terms of long-term cardiovascular events. So when we start to look at all of these aspects that then have a dovetail in creating financial stresses, as we've seen, in individuals, now we're inside of a whole different scenario where we're seeing the stress in America in 2025 has risen continually, exponentially. You've mentioned the impact on students. You know, I see it with my kids now are in college, and I see that level of stress and fear of the future, the fear of their ability to even have a career or even to fund their education for some of the students because of the potential impact in terms of grants. And so there is stress at an all-time high. And one of the things that has been taught subconsciously and consciously is the emotional eating, the concept of comfort food that then becomes pervasive. And so you have this crucible of conflict, that stress begins to happen, whether it's financial, whether it's political, whether or not it's relationship, all these things. And now you have individuals who are living inside of areas that are devoid of nutritional wealth. They're living inside of disparate communities nutritionally. And we wonder why disease flourishes because of the fact that now they turn to these comfort foods as the stress is at an all-time high. You know, stress can be a good thing. Our body, we need stress. We have to be able to respond. That's not the issue. The issue is the unrelenting, persistent nature of it and the impact that it has on us psychologically, physiologically, that then translates over into our actions. And it becomes this vicious circle that's there that we have to begin to break that cycle and begin to look in terms of how we can focus on resiliency in building that resiliency, which can be so hard at times. It's hard to focus on that and look at that silver lining and figure out how can we be resilient during these times of stress and of strife.
Dr. Katz, what would you add? I was just reading about some of the cuts that are happening from the Trump administration. Here's the Oncology Central. What do Trump's NIH restrictions mean for cancer research? NIH is the largest funder of cancer research. Here's how Trump administration cuts could impact patients. Here's another one from CBS, how Trump's health agency cuts could impact Alzheimer's research and patients. So this stuff is head spinning. And, you know, the people listening to our show care so deeply about these issues. And there's just so much happening at once. What would you say to people who are really struggling to deal with all of this and how it's, you know, it's affecting their overall health?
Yeah, well, Rose, I mean, the first thing I'd say is I'm right there with them. I'm tremendously stressed. And honestly, I struggle with anxiety every day as I witness the de-Americanization of an America I have always loved. And I don't think it's less than that. I mean, we're watching fundamental norms in our country, in our culture, be ripped away. The loss of due process, liberty and justice for all is starting to sound like a platitude and something quaint. And I remember saying that when I pledged allegiance to the flag. I guess that doesn't pertain anymore. Now it's liberty and justice for those who can afford it. So pretty horrible. The dismantling of infrastructure related to biomedicine and research, terrible. The assault on universities, terrible. I could go on and on, but I think what's going on is quite devastating. And I do think it's normal to be stressed and anxious in response to that. I'm trying to address it personally two ways. And then we can talk a little bit about nutrition and loop back into lifestyle medicine. But I don't want to be glib about any of this and pretend like, you know, people who are experts in lifestyle medicine are immune to the harsh reality that we're dealing with right now. We're not. We feel it too. So that would be the first thing, solidarity. I share in the stress. I share in the anxiety. I wake up every day and try to overcome it. One way I've tried to deal with this is remind myself every day that I have control over some of what's going on in some ways, and a lot of what's going on I don't have control over. And I'm going to focus on things I do have some degree of control over. My own daily routine, my interactions with the people closest to me and the people I love and my family. And I'm going to do all I can to derive strength there and to direct my focus there. But I don't want to have my head in the sand and not be involved with what's going on around me. And so when there's an opportunity to express myself in some constructive way, express my distress at what's happening to the ideals on which this country is built, I do that. And so I was at a protest rally in New Haven, Connecticut on the Green this past weekend. And frankly, it felt very therapeutic. It alleviated my stress. I was surrounded by like-minded people who shared my concerns. We may not have agreed about every small issue, but we certainly all agreed that America is supposed to be a democracy, that we care about due process and liberty and justice and all those good things. And we were there together, and we were there in multitudes. And I found doing something constructive to express distress alleviated the distress. So that's what I have to share at sort of a macro level. Just quickly pivoting, I would note that as Columbus and I talk about various lifestyle elements, so stress and mental health, diet, nutrition, physical activity, here's something where people can take heart. These things are highly interactive. As you improve the quality of your nutrition, which might not feel like a top priority at a time when you're overwhelmed by stress, it actually improves your stress tolerance. It's likely to enhance your sleep because it improves hormonal balance. Better sleep further improves your stress tolerance. And if you're eating better and sleeping better, you have a little more energy, which creates an opportunity for a bit more physical activity, which further enhances your stress tolerance. So none of these things have alleviated the sources of stress, but they start to fortify you and your ability to tolerate the stress so it's not damaging. And as Columbus says, we're all going to experience stress. Some forms of stress even help us, just like stressing a muscle can make it stronger. We refer to that as eustress. What we're looking to avoid is distress, and a lot of that comes down to your ability to process it effectively. So we can talk some more about that and how quick those effects are. But the lifestyle medicine formula is a feed-forward loop where getting any one of these practices right enables you to get others right, which makes you stronger and stronger. And it's like ascending a spiral staircase where the best version of your vitality is at the top, and you get up there one step at a time. Each step you climb puts the next step within reach. Mm.
Dr. Batiste, what would you like to add?
I think one of the most powerful things that Dr. Katz just mentioned is the fact that when he was at the rally, that he was around like-minded individuals. He was around individuals, and what that did was it fed him. And so we understand that living in isolation, and which is what our nation has moved towards, even in my own neighborhood, I come home, I get inside my garage from work, I try and get out for a walk, but I don't see a hustle and bustle of kids out and about any longer. We live in isolation, this bubble, but understanding as the research has grown about the power of connectivity, about connectedness rather, in terms of being connected with like-minded individuals and individuals who challenge you. It's inspiring. It's something that it does to it. It adds to our resiliency. And I think that that's so empowering, especially during these times of struggle, not to be in isolation, not to be solely focused and mulling over those things that are damaging to you, but figuring out how constructively we can move forward. Because he's right. I mean, I struggle. One of the things I enjoy having discussions with my patients is I struggle with every single thing that they do. Mm-hmm. My goal is just every day of figuring out how can I lower my risk? What can I do amidst all the things that are bombarding us inside of life, along with what is our purpose? What's my purpose in keeping that at the forefront of my thought process every single day, that as a Venn diagram, that things will start to come into place, whether or not it's inside my work, my community work, or whatever it may be. And so that's where I see that connect that connectedness that's so extremely important. And it builds, as has been mentioned before, keystone habits, whether or not it's through activity, our nutrition, all these things begin to empower you and strengthen you that allows you to withstand some of the horrible stressors that are out there that we're all inevitably gonna face.
We are going to take a quick break on today's Your Call. We continue our series on cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by talking about how to stay healthy during these stressful and unprecedented times. We're joined by Dr. Columbus Batiste, Regional Chief of Cardiology at the Southern California Kaiser Permanente Medical Group. Dr. Batiste is author of the brand new book, Selfish, A Cardiologist's Guide to Healing a Broken Heart. It provides a blueprint for coping with the everyday stressors of life that can lead to heart disease, anxiety, and depression. Dr. Batiste is co-founder of Healthy Heart Nation, an organization that works to foster a healthier future for people of African descent. We're also joined by Dr. David Katz, founding director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center, past president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and founder of two nonprofits. True Health Initiative is a coalition of experts from over 50 countries united to combat misinformation and disinformation that impact public, personal, and planetary health. And Diet ID measures and manages your population's diet and then takes steps toward better eating. He's the author of many books, including a book he co-authored with Mark Bittman called How to Eat. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we continue our series on cancer and chronic disease by discussing how to stay healthy during these unprecedented and stressful times. You can join us at 866-798-8255. If you have any questions for today's guests, really incredible lifestyle medicine doctors, Dr. Columbus Batiste and Dr. David Katz. If you have any questions or comments for them, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from Eileen who says, what do you say about the physiology of comfort food? That combo of fat, sugar, and carbs relieves stress for some people more than others. As I approach 80 in a few days, wow, happy early birthday, Eileen. I find that I've slowed down considerably. While I get exercise just from not owning a car, so getting everywhere by bike, I still don't get as much exercise as I did. Friends and spouses are not well, and all the loss is mirrored by loss in the news. So stresses increase with age, and cake is more satisfying than carrots. What are your thoughts on that one, Dr. Batiste?
Once again, you're not alone. So I'm going to relate with that. So my mother lives with me. I always say I don't live with my mother. She's 89, soon to be 90 in just a matter of a couple of months. And so I'm so grateful to have her in my life. And she's extremely active. And right now she's out and volunteering and then going to a ukulele session. But here's the amazing part, though, is that one of the things that troubles her is the news. It is the loss of all of her friends that are her generation. Mm-hmm. It is some of the struggles that are there that weighs down heavily on her despite her foundation spiritually and the fact that she lives a blue zone lifestyle in terms of dietary practices and so forth. And so one thing is I want you to realize is don't vilify if you're having something every once in a while, forgive yourself. It's okay. Don't see it as something that's horrible. Make sure you focus that on what you are eating for your health, as opposed to really focusing on, I can't have this or I can't have that. That's one of the things that I discuss with patients an awful lot. It's so easy for me to vilify every component of food, and I can do that. But I want to change the mindset and focusing on what you can have and really getting out at to the underlying issue, that stress, that loss, and once again, that comfort that you get from the memories and forming new ones. And that's hard when you're in situations like that. So small example with my mom is that when I'm able to get myself away from being so busy and spend time with her, even if she might be inclined to want to have her whatever sugary treat that's there, my spending time and interacting with her or my siblings, that goes further, that interaction, than those treats for her. And so once again, trying to find avenues that can restore and strengthen your fortitude are so important during these times. And don't beat yourself up over having a slice of cake every once in a while, but really focus on the other good foods. That's what I would say from a very simplistic perspective, but I'm interested to hear what Dr. Katz's response as well.
Oh, I'm happy to jump in. So Rose, the question started out with the physiology, and for starters, foods affect neurotransmitter levels. They affect serotonin, they affect dopamine levels. So when we think about comfort food, there absolutely are physiologic pathways that account for those effects. And I agree with Columbus that sometimes the cake is just the right thing to do because, you know, after all, the real value of better health is a better quality of life. And the value of eating something you love is pleasure, which adds to your quality of life. So if you think of both of these as feeding into the best possible life, you don't want to trade one off against the other. You don't want to trade off good food versus good health. But I think there is an opportunity to think about the immediate versus the important. And sometimes the immediate gratification of eating something sugary or sweet or something that's a bit indulgent is not sufficient. The return on that is not sufficient to justify the cumulative effect where you're less healthy, you feel less well, you maybe have less energy than you'd like, you're sleeping less well than you want to. The overall quality of your diet absolutely dictates those things. So while comfort food and snack foods and fast foods can give you an immediate boost in mood and comfort, there's a quick decline. You often get a surge of insulin, blood sugar level goes up, it comes down, hormone levels are affected, and you feel better for a little bit. But then those same neurotransmitters actually wind up being depleted. In contrast, a high quality diet, which is, we haven't stated this, but it's mostly made up of whole, minimally processed or unprocessed vegetables, fruits, grains, beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds, and plain water when thirsty. That's the formula. Michael Pollan described it as eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Same basic formula in a little more detail. That's actually associated with better resilience in neurotransmitter levels, more stability in neurotransmitter levels, higher tolerance of stress because you have a greater equanimity from the ground up. You're actually establishing the building blocks of stress tolerance. So there's some trade-off. If you occasionally indulge in food because the time is right and your mood is right and it's just the right thing, I'm right there with my colleague saying that's fine. It certainly shouldn't be vilified. And, you know, if you're feeling pretty good and pretty active at 80, you're doing something right. So, you know, enjoy that moment. If those moments add up to become the overall pattern of your diet, right? I mean, if the occasional cake is cake all the time or snack food or junk food all the time and seriously compromising the quality of your diet, it's likely to compromise the quality of your energy. It's likely to compromise the quality of your sleep. It's likely to impair the resilience of those same critical pathways in the brain. And now you're probably paying too high a price. So I would say there's a balance to strike. Get it right most of the time. Get the fundamentals of healthy eating right. There's an immediate benefit in energy and stress tolerance and quality of sleep and all of that. And then within that generally healthy self-nurturing space, create room for indulgences when they really matter to you. So you strike a balance between the immediate and the important.
Dr. Katz, can you tell us, this is such a simple but important question, how do foods impact the body?
I think for a general audience, it's best to think of it in two very simplistic ways. Imagine, first of all, a construction site. You're building a house. If you had too much brick and not enough lumber, you couldn't build an intact house. If you had all the lumber, but none of the wiring, you couldn't build an intact house. And you just can run the circuit in your mind of all the different things you need. You need all the right materials in all the right proportions. Well, your body is the house and food is the construction material. And obviously it's pretty clear that there's construction going on with the growing body of a child. So you can think of any child that you care about, your child, your grandchild, as someone who is literally growing themselves out of the construction material provided by their food and getting high quality construction material in a balanced array is essential to the quality of that construction. But adults are reconstructing themselves every day as well, because we're turning over hundreds of millions of spent cells, we're using up enzymes, we're burning through hormones, all of that needs to be replaced. Same critical issue. Your body every day is a construction site. You need a balanced array of construction material to have a high quality structure. That construction material is food and only food. That's one. Two is, in addition to being the construction material for the body, food is the fuel. And you think about any machine and how critically important it is to run a high performance engine on high performance fuel. It could be your car, it could be something else. But, you know, basically, if you want a rocket ship, you need rocket fuel. Food is the fuel for every one of the wondrous things, the interconnected processes that a healthy body needs to perform every day. Food is the one and only source of fuel. So it's critically important in those two key ways. And when you think about that, it's construction material. So everything I am is made out of what's derived from the food I eat. And I'm running on fuel every day, and food is that fuel. It should come as no surprise that food has a profound impact on absolutely every aspect of health.
Well, today on Your Call, we are continuing our series on health by talking about how to stay healthy during these stressful and unprecedented times. And we're joined by two lifestyle medicine doctors. Dr. David Katz is founding director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center, past president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and the founder of two nonprofits, True Health Initiative and Diet ID. He's the author of 19 books. He co-authored the book How to Eat with Mark Bittman. Dr. Columbus Batiste is regional chief of cardiology at the Southern California Kaiser Permanente Medical Group and author of the new book Selfish, A Cardiologist's Guide to Healing a Broken Heart. He is co-founder of Healthy Heart Nation. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have an email from a listener who says, I'm so glad you're doing this series. So many people I know are suffering from cancer or chronic disease. How can we deal with all of this, given the cuts we're facing and the shows that you did about people who are addicted to ultra-processed foods? They are so hard to stay away from. Dr. Batiste, what are your thoughts on that? Last week, we did shows about the obesity crisis. How do we talk about it without shaming? Ultra-processed foods, and then food addiction. So what are your thoughts? Because it's been really incredible to hear from so many listeners whose parents have cancer or whose loved one has Alzheimer's. It seems like everyone knows someone who's got some kind of illness.
No, it's so important right now in this day and age, and it has always been, in the role of food in terms of development of disease. And if you go back to Dr. Katz's analogy of what David mentioned in terms of food being the construction materials, a simple way, I remember I just worked on a patient who was a wood shop person, and we were talking about good solid wood, oak and pine versus particle board. Mm. And you think of ultra-processed food as a food-like component that's like particle board. It can look good on the outside. It may serve a purpose to some degree, but it's really flawed, and it won't hold up and withstand the test of time. And so in a very similar construct, when we start looking at the ultra-processed foods, because all food is processed to some degree when you pick it, when you cut it, when you slice it, when you bake it with minimal ingredients from the NOVA classification all the way up. But what's concerning are the foods that are comprised out of chemicals that we can't pronounce, that we can't replicate in our kitchen. And it's no wonder about what begins to happen on a cellular basis. That begins to happen in terms of if it's really fueling disease or if it's fueling our health. And so how do you break this cycle that's there. I'll tell you. So in one of my roles, I hosted a cooking class in my medical group, and we called it the cath lab. So as an interventional cardiologist, I go and I perform procedures in what's called the cardiac catheterization laboratory to open up vessels and alleviate symptoms. And so we called it the cath lab, cooking alternative to health. And so as we would go down this road, I remember telling my dietitian who I work with, I said, we're going to do a no cooking cooking class for all the people who don't have time. Mm-hmm. They're too busy. And the reason for that was I had a patient who said, Doc, I live in a 400 square foot room. It has insects inside of it. Mm-hmm. And all I have is a microwave. And so how can I do it? And it really reframed my thought in terms of, can we use processed food to work for us? Now, when I say processed, I mean canned foods that are just beans alone. Can we get frozen vegetables that won't go bad? Can we begin to have our rice that's already pre-cooked or boiled in the bag to make things as simple as possible? And as we begin to uncover the fact that we can begin the process of using food and processed foods to our benefit, right? Not completely negating understanding the stressors of time where we're at. That's important. But we also have to begin to vote with our dollars, because imagine this, 35 years ago, you didn't see as many, quote unquote, whether processed or not, plant-based options inside grocery stores. This is something that has been a dictate according to the consumerism, right? And the drive in terms of dollars, that we have to begin the process of figuring out how we can maintain the flavor of our foods, but still move beyond that. Now, last I'll say is this, is that, you know, as a kid growing up inside the inner city, I had a major sweet tooth. I call myself a sugar addiction to as many people and listeners perhaps out there. And I'll tell you, as I've grown up, one of the ways in which I've had to make shifts that I still get the cravings just like you do. After a long day, I still want to gravitate towards something if it's readily available. And so I've made accommodations. I'll have a smoothie. I may add a little bit more fruit and less vegetables inside that smoothie when I need that bolster that's there, that I'll have a crunch. I'll add some, sprinkle some pistachios inside there. And so you begin to figure out how I can start to make substitutes according to the things that I desire, I like, that can be more nutritionally fulfilling for me, that can restore my body. But recognizing those feelings, understanding those feelings, and recognizing the taste as well, which are so, there's such a complex interplay between the construction of ultra-processed foods with the salt, sugar, and fat, and then obviously the impact long-term in terms of our health.
Dr. Batiste, what strikes you about what you are seeing and hearing from your patients? Again, you're regional chief of cardiology at the Southern California Kaiser Permanente Medical Group. What has really changed over the years?
Stress has been an all-time high. Mm-hmm. It is increasing exponentially, and that's something that I've seen. I've seen it play out as it relates to Takotsubo broken heart syndrome. More when I first entered practice, that was a rarity. I wasn't even taught about it in training. Mm-hmm. And it's a regular occurrence. We're seeing all of the impact of it. And when you stop and you speak with patients, you start to uncover this quickly. You understand the impact when you see family bringing in the foods that they're eating, with the hospital system in terms of the food that's delivered. And you recognize that there is a huge problem that we've all known in the lifestyle realm that has to be addressed, and trying to reach people in a fashion in which they can understand. You know, one of the common things I will mention is our goal is to lower your risk. Right, we will never be at zero risk, but can I lower your risk to improve your odds as much as possible? And what's important to you? If what's important to you is your health, then we have to develop a plan that works, that moves you closer towards what your impression is, and within the confines of what your culture and what your desire is. And that's what we call nutritional security, is maintaining someone's culture while still providing them with nutritional relevance in terms of the components that can enrich their body and prevent disease.
Well, Dr. Katz, a number of the doctors that we've had on over the past few months have talked about how they got hardly any nutrition training in medical school. Was that the same case for you? And did you learn anything about stress in medical school? And then what does it look like today?
Well, I think we could, Columbus and I will likely, we learned a lot about stress, most of it not good in medical school and residency training, because we were pretty stressed during those times, incredibly long, arduous hours. So I don't know whether that counts as the kind of education you had in mind, Rose. So I'll talk about medical education and nutrition in just a second. But just to back up, on the issue of practical strategies for dealing with junk food or ultra-processed food addiction, I've long advocated for what I call taste bud rehab. And I just quickly point out to people, it's interesting and not coincidental that babies in Mexico grow up to like and have a tolerance for chilies, and babies in India grow up liking curries, and babies in Japan grow up liking raw fish. We all have the same physiology. We all have the same biology. We all have taste buds that work in exactly the same way, but we have different exposures. We have different cultures, and they shape taste preference. Familiarity is a critical driver and determinant of taste preference, probably the single most important. And taste preferences start to be shaped while we are in utero. They're further shaped through breast milk, but they can be reshaped throughout life. And that's where taste bud rehab comes in. So if you continue to feed a sweet tooth ever more sugar, it grows into a sweet fang and takes over your life. But there's a lot of hidden sugar in processed foods that we don't even register as sweet. Salty snacks have added sugar, and pasta sauce has added sugar, and salad dressings have added sugar. You can take gram after gram after gram of added sugar out of your daily diet without ever touching sweet food you really care about. But when you do that, you start to wean your sweet tooth off that level of requirement, and you are satisfied with less. And before you know it, your desserts start to taste too sweet, or you don't enjoy that soda quite so much. And then there's an opportunity to modify those. I've been through this innumerable times with patients over the years, and I've studied the research literature on it. It's a very powerful, simple process. You just incrementally start to dial down your exposures, and you come to prefer less sugar, less salt, less added fat. The promised land, as you start to wean off ultra-processed food and deal with that addiction, is not giving up food you love so you can have health you love. It's loving food that loves you back. And everybody can move in that direction. So you can Google taste bud rehab and see some of the things out there that in particular I've written on that topic. But it's simple. It's accessible to everybody. It's incremental. You go at your own pace, but it can make a lasting difference. Mm. On the topic of nutrition in medical training, it was very deficient back in my day. I had to find it for myself. And one of the reasons I ultimately did sequential residencies in internal medicine and then preventive medicine, public health, is I didn't get nearly enough training in lifestyle and diet in medical school. I didn't get enough training in residency. I had to go after it and seek out a special education. There are better paths to that education now than then, but still not very good. And there are all kinds of reasons why. But one final comment before I pass the baton again, Rose. The other question you raised earlier is, you know, with all the things being done to dismantle the federal government working as it should, and biomedical science and the CDC and the NIH and the FDA and all the things we've counted on, how can we be healthy in spite of all of that? Mm. And I would simply point out, and both Columbus and I have referenced the Blue Zones, in places around the world where people are the healthiest and have the best diets and live the longest and have the least chronic disease, it's not because of institutions intervening in their lives. It's because the fundamentals they have control over themselves are in good shape. Mm-hmm. They interact in healthy ways with one another. They walk every day. They eat a diet of real foods. They get enough sleep. By coming together as a community, they help to manage any stress they're exposed to. These are simple, actionable things in our own lives with our own families, our own loved ones. So I would encourage people to recognize that the value proposition of this simple lifestyle formula is a chance to have 80% less chronic disease and premature death in the world around us, 80% less personal risk. A lot of the control is in our own hands. Doesn't make it easy to get there from here, but it shifts the focus from what we need institutions to do for us and where we might focus on modifying our own lifestyle practices as best we can.
And unfortunately, we are out of time. We would love to have both of you back. Dr. David Katz is co-author of the book, How to Eat. Dr. Columbus Batiste is author of the new book, Selfish, A Cardiologist's Guide to Healing a Broken Heart. They are both giants in the field of lifestyle medicine. Dr. Katz and Dr. Batiste, thank you so much for your work. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you back soon.